It's February 28th. You're listening to the Humanist Network News, an audio production by the Institute for Humanist Studies. I'm your host, Duncan Crary.
It ain't necessarily so. It ain't necessarily so. The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so.
We've got a great show lined up for you today. In the first half, we'll be speaking about the Muhammad cartoon controversy. In the second half, I'll talk with a young man who recently auctioned himself off on eBay as an atheist willing to be sent to church by the highest bidder. We have several listener comments and some original recordings of humanist-themed music that I look forward to sharing with you later in the show. But we have a lot to cover, so let's get started. Humanism is a non-religious philosophy based on reason and compassion. Humanists champion secular ethics and human rights, the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech, and the freedom to be critical of religion are fundamental freedoms that are most important to humanists. Therefore, you've probably been following the Muhammad cartoon controversy in the news lately. In September, a Danish newspaper, the Jyllands Posten, published some caricatures depicting the prophet Muhammad. There is a general Islamic tradition that bans any depictions of the prophet Muhammad, and many Muslims took this act to be blasphemous. When the cartoons first appeared in Denmark, the reaction was not violent. However, when they were republished by a Norwegian newspaper, radical Muslims in the Middle East began to protest violently. Protesters burned the Danish and Norwegian embassies in Syria. The Danish consulate in Lebanon was also set fire. Even today, protests continue in Pakistan. There have been several death threats directed not just at the editor of the Jyllands Posten, who first solicited the caricatures for publication, but to the entire newspaper, and to all of the cartoonists who participated in this project, sending them into hiding. So about a week ago, I contacted some cartoonists to speak about this issue. Not just any cartoonist, but some free-thinking cartoonists. You may be familiar with their work as it appears in our weekly e-zine, Humanist Network News. Let's listen to what they had to say. I'm joined by three cartoonists for this week's podcast. With the recent Danish cartoon controversy, we figured that who better to talk to about all this than some cartoonists, and specifically some free-thinking cartoonists. I have Michaela B. Reed, who is a Brooklyn-based political cartoonist. Her work has appeared in the LA Times, the Boston Phoenix, Detroit's Metro Times, Ms. Magazine, The Funny Times, and In These Times. She was featured as cartooning's angry young woman in the 2004 anthology Attitude 2, The New Subversive Alternative Cartoonists, edited by Ted Rao. Thanks for joining us, Michaela.
Thank you.
I'm also joined by Matt Boers, who is an illustrator and cartoonist living in Ohio. His illustrations appear in newspapers around the country, and his weekly political cartoon, Idiot Box, runs in the Funny Times, 7 Days, The Buffalo Beast, and has appeared in The Nation. Idiot Box also appears in the Humanist Network News e-zine. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Hey, what's happening?
And lastly, we have lastly but not least, Jeff Swenson is an online cartoonist. His work includes The Cynic comic strip, which runs Monday through Friday, Frenetic Wanderings, a weekly gag cartoon panel series, and Free Thunk, a weekly gag cartoon panel series relating to topics of interest to atheists, agnostics, humanists, and other varieties of freethinkers. Freethunk also appears in the Humanist Network e-zine as well. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Duncan.
I wanted to do a quick poll just for our readers, for our listeners, who are generally humanists and freethinkers and atheists. Just quickly, I'm going to go down the line, and I'm going to ask you to briefly describe your worldview as you normally do. Michaela, how do you describe your worldview? Are you an atheist?
Yes, I'm an atheist. I always would describe myself as an atheist. But I mean, of course I would also describe myself as a humanist. My beliefs are definitely based in respect for, you know, humankind and the furtherment of, you know, human relations, but not any type of spiritual or religious belief.
Okay, good. And Matt, how do you describe your worldview?
I would have to say pretty much the exact same thing.
Okay, and Jeff, lastly, do you use the term atheist to describe yourself?
Yeah, I usually tell people that I'm an agnostic atheist because it trips them up, because people have a preconceived idea of what an atheist is.
Right.
So I tell them, because I cannot know, therefore I don't believe.
Okay, good. Well, at least we know where you're all coming from. Although you may have similar worldviews, you don't necessarily all agree on the Muhammad cartoon controversy that was sparked by some cartoons that appeared in a Danish newspaper. Matt, you've been very adamant on your blog, and you've been contacting me recently about the situation. In a nutshell, I mean, are the papers that refuse to run the cartoons, or are the columnists and the people who are speaking out against running these cartoons, are they genuinely concerned for respecting Islam, or do you feel that this is simply fear of extremism masquerading as respect?
Well, it's both. And then also people that are printing them, some of them are printing them, you know, trying to defend freedom of speech or trying to just show people so they can see them to open a debate, and then some of them were printing them to provoke Muslims. But like Michaela, she's told me that she's not in favor of printing them, and she's obviously not against freedom of speech. But yeah, a lot of people are... in America, too, have been afraid to print them. The New York Press, which is obviously a very liberal paper, was going to print them, and the publisher, you know, spiked it, and the editorial board walked out. And then, like, the Seattle Stranger, they ended up printing them. One of the few papers in America that printed them.
Well, what is your take on the cartoons? I mean, do you find them truly offensive? Do you find them spiteful and offensive?
Honestly, I don't find that many of them offensive. I understand... you know, being offended at your prophet being portrayed with devil horns or with a bomb on his head, but I don't understand rioting over it.
Right.
Can I respond?
Absolutely, Michaela. I was just about to ask.
I would just like to say, I do think the cartoons were designed to offend. Offensiveness doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like, it's, you know, I think I hear a lot, well, these cartoons weren't that offensive. I mean, if they had drawn him, the ones that were drawn of him as a pedophile... that were added to the cartoons later, those are offensive, but these aren't truly offensive. And I think that's really a misunderstanding of the situation. The cartoons, the original context for this is Denmark has a fairly small Muslim population, and attacks against Muslims, like racial attacks, in Denmark had been on the rise. You know, I think we had this idea that Europe is a very liberal place, so they were against the war in Iraq, but in fact, there's a lot of really serious anti-immigrant sentiment. And the paper that ran these cartoons originally... is part of that. They're a right-wing paper that's allied with groups that actually, in some cases, want to just completely eject Muslims from Europe. Muslims are a minority population in this country. So I think you have to look at what this publisher was trying to do. He'd set out to offend. Like, they were commissioned for that purpose.
Now, Michaela, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm just wondering, isn't some of the context of running these cartoons, though, the Theo van Gogh or Theo van Gogh?
Yeah, no, of course.
Murder.
Now, what I'm not saying that in any way, like, violence is ever a correct response to free speech.
Right.
These papers, I don't agree with their reasons for running these cartoons, but they have the right to run them. I mean, free speech, I'm a cartoonist. I don't want someone saying, let's cut her head off because I didn't like what she drew about, you know, Christian fundamentalists. Like, it's not... That's still an absolute. I still think that a lot of what's getting lost in this debate is, well, I don't see what's offensive about these cartoons. Like, we do, like, and the other thing, too, is there's also the other context. Like, this really plays into, like, Islamist leaders' desire to conflict. It's like you've got these two schoolboys on the other side of the room going yan, yan, and yan, yan at each other, and they're both like, wow, this is a great opportunity. I mean, for hardline Islamists, this is a great opportunity for them to say, look, here's proof. Here's proof that the West hates us, they colonized us, they treat Muslims like crap, and this is what they think of us. Look at these racist caricatures of Muslims. And then for right-wingers, and then also for free thinkers and, you know, liberals in the West, it's like, whoa, these people think the response to freedom of speech is to cut people's heads off instead of just writing a letter to the editor.
Right.
You know, it's nasty.
But Kayla, I don't understand why they're looking at the cartoons as proof that the West hates them. I mean... we've invaded two of their countries and bombed the hell out of them. Maybe when the Lancet reported that we have killed 100,000 civilians in Iraq, they should have rioted then. I mean, that would have been more understandable than this.
Responses to that. I mean, like,
this
is part of that too. I mean, this is like the thing is, cartoons are powerful. I mean, why are we in this medium if we don't think cartoons are powerful? Visual images have a certain. I mean, look at like the pictures from Abu Ghraib. I mean, I would be surprised if those, I would think those would cause more riots, but you're right. I mean, but I still think, like, cartoons are, ink is dangerous stuff. I still believe in the complete right to free speech, but I also believe in good judgment and not just creating racist cartoons for the heck of it.
I'd like to jump in, actually. I want to hear from Jeff right now. Jeff, one of your cartoon series, Free Thunk, you push some limits with that cartoon series. Your recent cartoon was actually rather funny. Commenting on this, it showed Muhammad in the bathroom looking at himself in the mirror and saying, blasphemy. Where do you fall in on this controversy between what Michaela is saying and what Matt is saying?
Well, I'd probably be somewhere in the middle. I actually agree with Michaela that the cartoonists knew what they were doing. The intention was to offend and to cause a provocation, because that's what we cartoonists like to do. But the reaction kind of proves the point of some of the cartoons, unfortunately, like the bomb on the turban on one of them. So, unfortunately, I don't know exactly what the exact intention of the cartoonist was. I mean, was he referring to Iran developing nukes? Was he referring to suicide bombers? I'm not sure, but the reaction shows me that, you know, as much as I hate the violence, it seems like they needed to be offended. I realize that there is a lot of racism. But there's also racism on the other side. The Holocaust tunes that they're going to be printing, that kind of reaction isn't exactly great either. And I know, you know, from, you know, I have a friend who lives in Israel. I know that racist cartoons and racist propaganda, especially with the Holocaust, are being put out, more than ever now. So I'm for publishing the cartoons, but I can definitely see, you know, the race angle. But also, three of the cartoons weren't meant to be, you know, racist at all. They were actually meant to be favorable.
Yeah, they were actually in reaction to the paper's decision to have a cartoon contest at all. One of them said, the Jill is posting is a bunch of reactionary provocateurs. In the cartoon, it says that.
Unfortunately, though, there's been no differentiation between
they're all in hiding,
cartoonists.
Afraid for their lives.
I mean, the imams and stuff that came out against us didn't say, we're against the two cartoons that were one with the bomb and the one with the horns.
Not.
They said that all these cartoonists need to die.
This totally fits into their fundamentalist aims. I mean, they want this war. They want, like, for example, Iran, they want people to support them having nukes. I mean, Egypt is a fairly secular government, but they want to appease hardline Islamists in the country. Like, it's a win-win situation for, you know, these countries that want to satisfy the Islam, you know, the fundamentalist masses. It's like, you know, with Bush, you know, how does he satisfy the Christian right? Well, he makes it impossible for funding for birth control and family planning in Africa, you know. He has the global gag rule.
Now, Michaela, I want to ask you, of the cartoons, it seems like there are two different elements that are offending Muslims. One is just simply depicting the Prophet Muhammad at all. The other is depicting Muslims as violent. Which are the cartoons that you really have a problem with? Just simply depicting Muhammad, which is blasphemous according to their beliefs, offending them just by doing that, or is it the violence?
It's really complicated. Again, I think it has to do with context, because there have been cartoons and images drawn of Muhammad in the past in Western society that did not ignite this type of response.
Right.
I think it was the collection of the cartoons as a whole. I mean, again, though, I actually took an Islamic art history class in college, and the class was all about calligraphy and architecture, but there were a couple of examples of, you know, figurative art. It's kind of this thing where it's like, it's not a firm rule, like, but a lot of societies, like, it's just a pretty serious thing. And so I think it is the actual depiction of Muhammad that was partially the offense. But it's also the fact, you know, it's like this kind of compounding thing. They said, let's have a contest and ask 40 cartoonists to draw Muhammad just because we're not supposed to.
So I think it's time to challenge that belief, though. I mean, I agree that the paper didn't have the best of intentions, and obviously I, they're not a secular humanist paper, but if I moved to Europe and decided to do a cartoon on Muhammad, I'm not doing it because I'm a racist or because I'm a bigot or anything. I mean, and I wouldn't be able to do that without being able to fear for my life.
Well, right. You're just challenging the idea of somebody actually depicting somebody who's
I think
so godly.
I think that's what this has turned into for me, because if the reaction of the Muslim world was just angry letters to the editors or having people go on television and say we don't like being portrayed as violent and things like that, then I think most people may be on the side of the Muslim world and saying, yeah, they were just trying to provoke a reaction. But since it's been so over the top, I mean, there's still riots going on. It, like Jeff was saying, it's almost proven a lot of right-wingers' points that, you know, Islam is a violent religion and stuff like that. I mean, honestly, I think they're making themselves look bad.
Well, the reaction of the West is actually what interested me more. I mean, I got a quote here from the Vatican that says, the right to freedom of thought and expression cannot entail the right to offend the religious sentiment of believers.
Okay.
So you got the West saying that we can't, part of the responsibility of free speech is not to offend religious sentiments.
Well, of course. I mean, like, why do you think the State Department responded that way? Our government is run by, like, right-wing religious crazies.
Yeah, right.
And their interest is to not, you know, I mean, it's not, again, like, there is a difference here because there's actual violence. There's burning of embassies. People have died in these riots. But the reaction to religious depictions is not, you know, unique to Muslims. The violence and the extent of the protest might be unique in this instance. But again, like, violence is not, the war in Iraq is not necessarily like a religious war, but we certainly have the so-called East has no monopoly on death or violence.
It is kind of a culture war, though.
I totally agree. It's a very strange thing too. Because I think a lot of the reactions from the West, like you said, they're interesting because you have a lot of governments saying, oh, let's be respectful, let's not offend religions. But then a lot of the individual reactions I find have been totally bigoted and ignorant. I mean, it's like a race to the bottom. They might not be killing people or setting fire to things, but a lot of mainstream editorial cartoonists in America have started just even more drawing these giant hook-nosed Arabs with huge turbans, and they all have scimitars, and they're all cutting off people's heads. And it's true that these protests like create that image. But it's also true that a lot of moderate Muslims are offended by these cartoons, and they're not doing this rioting. They might be going to peaceful protests. You know, like, it's kind of a tricky thing.
But the people at the protests, I'm glad that, you know, they're not all advocating violence, but there's still a large portion of the Muslim world that, even if they're against the violence, would say that they think it should be against the law to even draw this kind of stuff.
Well, Matt, I want to ask you, Matt, you chose for your cartoon to comment on this, you were commenting on the Tom Stoles cartoon and the Muhammad controversy. Can you explain your work recently? Tom Tolles.
Yeah, he did a comic of a quadruple amputee in a bed and Rumsfeld standing over him saying something. And that prompted a letter from all six members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying that it was offensive and stuff, which was kind of ironic. I mean, you know, it's offensive to draw a quadruple amputee, but it's not offensive to create one by your orders. So they were offended by that, and then obviously the Muhammad thing. So I combined, you know, the most offensive image of Muhammad, which was the turban one, and I basically drew it in Tom Toll's style, which I don't know how to explain. It's kind of simple, and it's really recognizable. So I kind of imitated that style and drew the quadruple amputee, but it had the head of the Muhammad with the bomb. So I imagine if, people in Iran get a hold of it, they're not going to like me too much because they probably won't understand the context or even care about it. But yeah, so.
And you've received some hate mail on your blog already about that cartoon, correct?
Yeah, somebody wrote me a real nasty one. I don't know if
this
podcast is rated.
Well, we're running out of time, but I want to ask Jeff something. Jeff, I interviewed you maybe a year and a half ago for our e-zine. And we were talking about satire and cartooning. You were originally very religious, and cartooning helped kind of break down some of those religious ideas. Is that correct? Can you explain that briefly? What happened?
I would actually say that, I was religious to the point of being on the opposite side of where I am now, very much a Christian conservative. And I would say that actually not only cartooning, which cartooning actually is kind of like being able to detect BS So that kind of skill kind of helps, kind of like skepticism in a way. Essentially what did it was isolationism, basically going to art school and, you know, being exposed to other ideas and just getting away from my past, because I actually moved from Oregon to Seattle. It was kind of a journey, so there's a lot more to it, but cartooning is one of the elements. I did used to do Christian cartooning, so I'm familiar with a lot of the stuff that you're seeing now has emerged, and it's making money. When I was involved around that time, it wasn't making any money. Nobody thought it would ever do that. And so now you have, like, the Christian rock scene, you have Christian comics, you have an entire Christian pop culture that my concept with Freethunk is that we need to start competing with our own pop culture of sorts. Just by creating our own characters, atheist characters. I don't know about, music. I know that some people are starting to do stuff with that. But my idea is that since I was involved in the pop culture that Christians developed, I would like to actually help develop a free thought pop culture that kind of competes. Because I think it's kind of like a gateway drug. People don't exactly know what we're talking about, and we sound like geeks. That, at least from my experience, is like kind of just yeah, yeah, yeah. If you can find a way to entertain them and kind of draw them in, kind of like Penn and Teller, I think you have a chance to gain more people who would think, who would enjoy free thinking. I think there actually are a lot of free thinkers out there who would not identify themselves as atheists because of the stigma. Yeah. Associated with atheism.
I totally agree. I feel like every time you say I'm an atheist, it's like, well, wait, couldn't you at least be agnostic? Like, this kind of thing. I think that's like the one. I feel like very strong as a cartoonist that I'm gonna start creating characters because it seems like the one unacceptable thing in America. You have to be a person of faith. Like, even though what they really mean is a Christian person, like
almost like anywhere in the world,
any faith but no faith. Like Joe Lieberman said once or something. That's the only unacceptable thing.
Now, what about you, Matt? How do you work in your atheism into your work?
Well, I guess just general skepticism and free thinking. I don't really address atheism that much. I criticize religious fanatics a lot. I did a comic for The Nation called Science Textbook for Christians, which it wasn't called Science Textbook for fundamentalist Christians or anything, and a couple of people wrote me about that, but I had friends that were religious and understood that, I was just making fun of fundamentalist Christians. I guess I don't have a problem with anyone believing in a religion as long as they're not wanting to cut my head off or anything like that.
Well, we're out of time for today, but thanks a lot for joining us. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And I'm sure we'll hear from you again in our e-zine, and we'll probably have you back on more podcasts.
All right, cool.
Great, thanks.
This is Allison Bates, the campus organizer for the Secular Student Alliance, and you're listening to Humanist Network News.
We were just listening to three free-thinking cartoonists, Michaela B. Reed, Matt Boers, and Jeff Swenson. Michaela joined us by phone from Brooklyn. Her cartoon, The Boiling Point, recently started to appear in the Humanist Network News e-zine, which can be found at humanistnetworknews.org. You can read more of what she has to say about the Muhammad cartoon controversy at her website, michaela.net. That's michaela.net. You can also check out some of her previous cartoons while you're there. Matt Boers joined us from Ohio. His cartoon, Idiot Box, has appeared in the H&N e-zine for about half a year. He has a lot to say about this issue on his blog, which can be found at mattboers.com. You can also check out some of the cartoons he drew in reaction to the story while you're there. Jeff Swenson joined us from Seattle. His cartoon, Freethunk, was the first to be carried by Humanist Network News more than a year ago. You can read an essay by Swenson on this issue, as well as download some blasphemous Muhammad clip art at freethunk.net. That's freethunk.net. Check out Swenson's other cartoons at swensonfunnies.com. In the current HNN e-zine, Roy Brown, president of the International Humanist and Ethical Union, wrote a letter to the editor commenting on the cartoon controversy. In his final statement, Brown concluded, "No one has the right to be offended, nor to react violently when they are." The IHEU is the international umbrella organization for humanist and ethical culture groups around the globe. On Friday, the IHEU issued a press release urging the United Nations General Assembly to reject the demands of the Organization of the Islamic Conference, otherwise known as the OIC. According to the IHEU, the 56 member states of the OIC have pressured the UN General Assembly to include wording in a resolution that would inhibit discussion of any human rights abuses carried out in the name of religion in any theocratic state. The proposed wording calls on the new human rights body to, quote, prevent instances of intolerance, discrimination, incitement of hatred, and violence arising from any actions against religions, prophets, and beliefs which threaten the enjoyment of human rights and fundamental freedoms. Well, according to the release, this seemingly innocuous wording will enable any council member to stop any discussion or criticism of human rights abuses in the council on the grounds that such discussion could lead to instances of intolerance or violence in any state. And Brown is quoted in the release saying, "We know from experience that even without such a clause, the OIC have been able to limit discussion of human rights abuses by accusing NGOs of sacrilege, blasphemy, and defamation of religion. With this clause in place, any discussion of human rights abuse in the OIC states would be permanently silenced." You can learn more about the IHEU and read the press release at www.ihEU.org. Well, we've heard from cartoonists, we've heard from humanist leaders. Now, what do you, our listeners, have to say about this issue? In a recent Humanist Network News e-zine, I asked readers to call in and share their thoughts on this issue on our HNN podcast listener comment line. And we got some excellent responses. So let's hear what you had to say.
Hi, I'm calling about the Muhammad cartoons. What do I think about the Muhammad controversy? One, I have to say, I've been a joke writer for 20 years. It's my hobby. I write computer manuals. But I've been selling jokes to cartoonists and stand-up comics for years. And I have to say that the Muhammad cartoons are extremely mild, extremely mild. And I think it's a true black mark against the people rioting, that they should be so easily knocked off key. And also, I think it's interesting, the cartoons were published in September, and it wasn't until certain political factions and governments began advertising or making public the cartoons in their own country to incite anger and riots. I think what's perhaps most interesting, the cartoons themselves are very mild. What is scary, interesting, is the tinderbox, the fact that this tiny, tiny, tiny little match, this tiny, tiny, tiny little spark could set off such a huge reaction. Therefore, it's not the cartoons. It was obviously hundreds of thousands, millions of people with great anger, and the cartoons are merely the match that set off this bonfire. And I really think it's too bad. And frankly, I think people should make blasphemy part of their daily exercise. You know, there's an old Buddhist exercise to make a statement and make the counterstatement. To say, I am a writer, I am not a writer. I am a good person, I am not a good person. I love flowers, I do not love flowers. Because by saying a statement and then saying the opposite, it allows the mind to move across the full spectrum of thought, and it lets you explore the whole universe of face, stance, position, thought. And it's a very useful exercise. Wish I knew more about it and could say more about it, but it's a practice a couple thousand years old. And I think one of the goodnesses of that practice is it helps prevent one from becoming rigidly trapped in a stance by nothing other than habit and a few hundred thousand repetitions of a given statement. Anyway, thanks for asking. My name's Megs. I'm calling from Sarasota, Florida.
Hi, my name is Mark Simons. I'm calling from Round Rock, Texas. And it's concerning the Muhammad cartoons. I think that it's a way to break the mold down of the fundamentalist Islam mentality. We have our fundamentalists in America, but we've made them stand by the side because people are willing to stand up to their protests and demands. And I think that the same thing will happen to the Muslim world. If they realize that free speech is more important than their sacred ideas, then we'll all progress. Thank you.
Hi, this is Carl Schmiedeskamp in St. Paul, Minnesota, USA, commenting on the Muhammad cartoons. Seems strange to me that in a world of religion that offending a long-dead person is more of a sin than killing, maiming, and destroying. What a shame. Thanks.
Jeff Sherman, Simi Valley, California, United States. I'm calling about the Muhammad cartoon controversy. I think it was very wrong and shameful for the Danish newspaper to publish the cartoons last September and for the other European newspapers to publish them recently. There is no useful purpose served. I believe it is immoral to offend people unnecessarily. I think they knew that Muslims would be offended. And on a slightly different topic, I believe all foreign troops should leave Muslim countries. How would we like it if there were foreign troops in the United States? Thank you for giving me this opportunity to comment, and I look forward to more HNN emails.
Thanks to everybody who called in to leave a comment. I was so pleased to hear from you. Last podcast, I was a little bit despondent that we didn't have any comments in time for a podcast, but you really made up for it this time. HNN is an important dialogue. If you enjoy this podcast, if you like our e-zine, please remember to share it with others. Please also remember to write letters to the editor and to call into our listener line to share your thoughts. You're really helping make this a special project. If you would like to leave a listener comment, call 206-339-4168. That's 206-339-4168. Our listener comment line works just like an answering machine. You call up, you get a message, you leave us a message, and then we review it for possible inclusion in the next podcast. You can leave a message on anything you heard in today's show. You can comment on something you read in the HNN e-zine, or you can just comment on world news or what your humanist group is up to in any part of the world. Just let us know what's going on. This is a dialogue. So call 206-339-4168. I look forward to hearing from you. Okay, our next message is from a regular contributor of the HNN e-zine, Maline Matsumara. Maline writes our humanist advice column, Sweet Reason, where she offers advice to her letter writers on a variety of issues concerning the humanist lifestyle and life in general.
Hi, this is Maline Matsumara, also known as Sweet Reason, calling from Berkeley, California, USA. It's been great seeing letters in the Humanist Network News describing just how some organizations are helping student humanists. And I hope I'll see even more before this message is in the next IHS podcast. The big question is, what can we do to make sure as much information as possible gets to as many people as possible? So help me with one part. I'm putting out a call for people to write to me about every scholarship or essay contest available for young freethinkers. Those awards are wonderful support for our young people and a fine example of the good we do. When I have the most complete list possible, I'll not just include it on the resources page at www.sweetreason.net. I'll forward it to at least two well-known resources, like the Freethought Directory and the Secular Web. And I hope everyone listening will publish all of them too, even the ones from organizations you don't belong to, through all of your newsletters and websites. I'd rather hear about the same scholarship 10 times than none at all, so don't hesitate. Write to me at sweetreason@humanist.net. Use the subject line scholarship and watch for that list. Thanks.
Thanks, Maline. For our listeners, once again, to contact Maline, email sweetreason@humanists.net or visit her website, sweetreason.net. That was a great segue for our next segment, in which I will speak with Hemant Mehta. Hemant is a rising star in the secular student movement. I had a chance to spend some time with him in Los Angeles last month at the Free Thought Heads Summit, hosted by the Atheist Alliance International. It was a real treat to hang out with him. Hemant is the chairman of the board of directors of the Secular Student Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting secularism and critical inquiry among college and high school students. The Institute for Humanist Studies is a big financial supporter of the Secular Student Alliance. But first, a little music from Ocean Alexander. This is Kid Icarus, made available through PodSafeAudio.com. Earlier this month, a curious little auction appeared on eBay. For the right price, an atheist was willing to be sent to church by the highest bidder. Normally, on eBay, potential buyers are allowed to post questions about the condition of goods up for auction. But on this particular auction, the Ask the Seller feature turned into a huge diablog on religion, atheism, and the existence of God. Hemant Mehta, the eBay atheist, has now turned into somewhat of an online celebrity. He's made several appearances in the media, but it's his blog and another blog that he writes for that are generating the biggest buzz online. I spoke to Hemant on Friday. I have Hemant Mehta on the phone with me today. Hemant, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
For those of you who have not been paying attention to the blogosphere, Hemant is now a minor celebrity known as the eBay atheist. Hemant auctioned himself off, or at least auctioned off his time on eBay. He said he was willing to go to the house of worship of the highest bidder for 1 hour for every $10 that was pledged. And Hemant, how did you get yourself into this mess?
You know, I just had a random thought late at night that I should actually go ahead and do this. It's an idea I've had, and I was like thinking that I didn't think anyone had done it, and I just didn't know, but I decided, hey, why not try it and see what happens? I didn't think anything would come of it, so I didn't think it would be a big deal. I initially thought I should do an hour for every $1, you know, just so people would bid. But I'm glad I did at least 10. But yeah, the amount of bidding just skyrocketed at some point.
And what was the highest bid?
The winning bid was $504.
Okay. And that's a group called Off the Map.
Off the Map.
Which is, their mission is to, I think their tagline is teaching Christians to be normal. So what do they do over there at Off the Map?
Yeah, helping Christians be normal, I believe. And what they do is basically that they are Christian, and what they want to do is they want to get Christians away from this, you know, people just have an image of a lot of people you see on TV and just rabid fundamentalists, and they are saying that, no, we are reasonable people, we have our thoughts too, they should be respected as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what they like to do is get outsiders to go to churches to, you know, give them their take on it.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully the churches can learn what they can do to be more appealing to the, you know, people outside the church. And who better to do it, I guess, for them than an atheist?
Yeah. Now, Hemant, a little bit of background. You are 22 years old. You live in Chicago. This project is, you're going to be attending various churches in the greater Chicago region, correct?
Right. We've tried to stay at least nearby Chicago. We've talked about a possibly, one church in Florida was interested in flying me down. I don't know if that's actually going to happen.
Flying you down. This is becoming huge.
It is. I mean, I've gone to only three churches so far, and there's several more on the docket.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, every church we've gone to, the response has been amazing. The first church I went to was a Catholic church, and there was a big discussion on Catholicism and the rituals with that.
Mm-hmm.
The second church I went to was Willow Creek, which is a mega church in South Barrington.
Mm-hmm.
And what was strange about that is after the service, which I liked that service. It was a really nice service. So many people that commented on the blogs had been at the same one. And so they were saying, wow, like, I'm interested in hearing your take because I was at the same you know, so I listened to the same sermon. I heard exactly what you heard, and it's interesting to hear your take on it.
Right.
And just this past week, I went to another Park Community Church in Chicago. Very diverse place. And actually, one of the people who commented, I had said that I really didn't enjoy parts of the service. And actually, the pastor from that church had commented on the blog as well, that I read what you have to say. You know, some of it was, you know, pretty negative towards the way he spoke. And he said, you know what, I hear what you have to say, and I'll think about that.
Yeah, your comment on that was actually that it was people who are, like, praying to God for parking spaces. I can't quite remember what it was, but they're praying to God for mundane things, right?
Right. In their brochure, the church was meeting in an elementary school. Uh-huh. I mean, they have funding to build a new church. And one of the things I read in their brochure is, let's all pray that, you know, our parking space can be increased to a couple hundred more people. And it's like, really? That's what you're praying for? Isn't there anything else? You know, there's people dying.
Yeah. I've actually been approached by someone who's really religious who also told me that I should... she asked me how I was doing in my new apartment. I said, things are great, but you know, I got towed the other night because parking's really tough. She said, you need to pray to God for that. Obviously. So apparently a lot of Christians are praying to God for parking.
And I mean, once you get past the little things like that, I mean, there was a lot of comments on the message that the church was trying to send. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, some issues with the way the pastor presented it. But the fact that, you know, he actually commented and said, you know, I read this and I hear what you have to say and I'll think about it.
Right.
You know, it's not for me to say he should change what he's doing at all, but the fact that he's reading what we have to say, and it's just the response is amazing. And it's so... usually when you get into discussions like this, they get heated, they get mean, like just mean-spirited, and no one's done that.
Well, are a lot of people trying to convert you and proselytize to you, though?
I think unintentionally it comes off sometimes. Some people have said, you know, when you're going to these churches, you know, you're going in the right direction. Good for you.
Right.
You know, well, I'm fine where I am right now, you know. And I don't think they mean it to come off that way, but that's the undertone to what they're saying. But no one's actually said, Hemet, you need to be a Christian. And anyone who's actually tried to do that, they've pretty much been shot away by other people that said, that's not what this is about.
Right.
Which is impressive.
Well, actually, Hemet, what is this really about, though? I mean, you're a pretty avid atheist, but I think I remember reading something, and you're an active member of the Secular Student Alliance Board of Directors. Mm-hmm. But I think I remember hearing you say something about both religious people and atheists can get set in their ways, and you wanted to break out before you become an old curmudgeon. Is that right?
That's more or less the idea. I mean, I've been around so many atheists, and I love pretty much everyone that I've met in that group of people. Mm-hmm. But what happens is, you know, when you meet so many of these people, we pretty much believe that we are right. When you go to churches, they believe that they're right. And no one really needs to see the other side because they're so entrenched in their own ideas. And, you know, I think that I do believe that I am right in terms of my atheism. But, hey, who knows? Maybe I am wrong. I haven't seen any evidence for God yet. But, you know, if I can't put my own beliefs to the test, what good are they?
Right.
So I might as well go to a church, see what they have to offer. And, you know, maybe I'm missing out on something. Right now, I don't know that I am, but we'll see.
Well, now, what's your background? I notice a lot of people, they tend to take their parents' religion, maybe their parents' atheism. You know, what's your background? Were you always an atheist?
No, not at all. Uh-huh. My parents are very religious. I was raised a Jain, J-A-I-N. It's a religion from India. And, you know, a lot of the principles to the religion are wonderful. I mean, nonviolence, non-possessiveness, things like that. I mean, I'm still vegetarian now. The part where I started disagreeing with was when it came to, you know, who they prayed to and their concepts of heaven and hell. And when I started thinking about that and that stopped making sense for me,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I was about 14, I believe, and that's when I became an atheist. But I'm in a very religious family.
Yeah. Now, Hemet, this story is picking up speed. You have tons of people commenting on the off-the-map blog writing that you're doing, which for people listening, it's otmatheist.com is how you get to Hemet's off-the-map blog. That's the group doing outreach, teaching, showing Christians how to be normal. And Hemant, you also have your own personal blog that evolved out of the eBay auction. That's ebayatheist.blogspot.com, correct?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the things were on the OTM Atheist website. We tried to limit it to my church-going experiences and what's come from that. But a lot of people just, you know, everyone wants to spin it into a philosophical discussion about, you know, is there a God, is there no God, the nuances to that. So really, my blog is more of the philosophical arguments, debates about it.
Right.
And, you know, my own questions about religion that I would want answered. And who better to do it than a lot of the people that are commenting, because they are pastors, they are religious people, they're atheists.
Right.
You know, it's all over the place, and it's great.
Well, speaking of it being all over the place, I understand there's going to be, there's been a number of newspaper articles in the Chicago area. There's a couple big ones, I think, probably coming out soon.
Yeah, actually, there was one that appeared in my local paper, which, I mean, yeah, it's local, but it was on the front page of the local paper.
Right.
And the headline was, Auction for Salvation, and implying that I was selling my soul to the highest bidder. I mean,
right.
It was an interesting way they put it, but I mean, just the fact that they're putting an atheist on the front page of their paper, and what I consider to be a very positive light on atheism,
yeah.
It's not something you see, and I think you need to see more of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, because I know, like, that group in Texas, the group of students who did the
right.
Smut for Smut campaign,
for Smut.
I mean, they were giving out free porn for for religious scripture. That got a lot of ink. People love that kind of story. This one seems to be a little bit more positive,
right.
Your message a little bit more positive about listening to the other side and
right.
Showing the other side that you're human.
Yeah, the Smut for Smut campaign, I mean, it's definitely eye-grabbing. I mean, you definitely want to know what the story is all about.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It puts this negative spin on atheists that, you know, we're doing these things that a lot of people would consider bad. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone really has considered what I'm doing in going to the churches and commenting on them.
Right.
No one said that's a bad thing. So it's been pretty positive attention that this has received.
And also, you're getting a lot of positive press for the Secular Student Alliance, because I should point out that you're donating all of the money from this auction to the SSA.
Absolutely. All $504 is sent to the SSA. I'm sending the check as we speak, actually.
Yeah, well, this is probably the hardest earned $500 donation they've ever received, seeing as you're going to be putting in 50 hours in churches.
Right, and in terms, I mean, 50 hours will also include, you know, just blogging on their website, going to several churches. I'm actually planning on, at some point, going to an all-African church, because, you know, I haven't experienced that.
Right.
We're trying to get into other denominations as well. We'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I hope people can notice what SSA is doing, Secular Student Alliance is doing as well, because they do such good work.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, if me donating this money to them brings them more attention, too, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, before I let you go, Hemant, I got to ask you. I used to watch the television show Growing Pains. And one of the main actors, Kirk Cameron, played a character named Mike Seaver. Now he disappeared for a while, like a lot of child actors, and then he came back as this crazy evangelical you know, personality.
Evangelical.
Yeah, and you were on Way of the Master. So tell us, what was it like getting preached to and proselytized and called an idiot by Mike Seaver on Way of the Master Radio?
Kirk Cameron dissed me for more than 20 minutes. It was great. Well, it was interesting because I went in there. I knew full well how they approach atheists because I'd seen the videos. I know, just type in, you know, Way of the Master on Google, you'll get a number of videos. And you see what they do to atheists, which is just, you know, we're right, they're wrong, and let's just make them feel bad, basically. And so I went in thinking maybe they were actually interested in this auction and the dialogue that's been coming of it. But no, they basically... They spent about 2 minutes talking about the eBay auction,
mm-hmm.
and the next 30, 40 minutes trying to convince me that I'm evil and wrong for being an atheist.
Yeah, and did it work?
No. As soon as we actually hung up the phone, I heard the podcast, which is online later that night, and the link is on my website as well for that. But I was listening to the podcast, and after I hung up, they just ripped on me for the next 20 minutes. And, you know, I'm just thinking, really, that's the model for Christianity? And I think a lot of people And a lot of letters I've received have disagreed with the way they went about doing it, which is encouraging to hear.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely a new experience. I did not expect that, but it was definitely a learning experience.
Yeah. Now, Hemant, I asked you earlier if anyone's trying to convert you. Have you led to anyone losing their faith or giving up their faith since they've been reading your blogs?
You know what? I haven't had anyone directly say, wow, I became an atheist after reading what you're doing or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had a couple Christian people that have commented on the blogs that have said, you know, normally I didn't realize atheists had this logical, rational position behind what they're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They really think that it's something that stems out of, you know, just I don't like religion and that's the end of it. But no, there's actually a philosophical and just, you know, logical background to it. And they've said, wow, I've definitely become more open-minded about that. And I know that not all these atheists are the stereotypical version that I've always thought of. I mean,
right.
Someone said that on the comments, and it's just, that's amazing that they were able to get that out of the conversations that were going on.
Right. So, Hemant, you also, are you the editor of the Secular Student Alliance e-zine?
I am.
You know, I got to tell you, you're making me look bad. That's a really good e-zine.
Thank you. Yeah, we put out an issue called My Struggles with Disbelief.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, we had Bobby Kirkhart, who's the president of Atheist Alliance International.
Yeah.
Lori Lipman Brown, the director of the Secular Coalition for America, the lobbying group.
Mm-hmm.
And we're soon, we're going to be featuring an article by another person, but very high-profile atheists that write about their struggle with disbelief and living life as an atheist. And it's just, they're very personal stories. And for people who are maybe afraid to come out to their family or friends, for people who are relatively new at atheists, which I think is a lot of the people that read the e-news, it's very encouraging, and they're uplifting stories. So it's a fun experience to read some of these articles and put them out there.
Yeah, you're doing a great job. Like I said, you're making me work harder over here at Humanist Network News.
Thank you. And if people want to subscribe to the SSA e-news, again, that ebayatheist.blogspot.com has a link to subscribe to that as well.
Oh, good. Great. Well, Hemant, you know, thanks for doing this. It's a real trip. I keep checking out your blogs when I get a chance, and I'm looking forward to reading more of your stuff. Keep doing what you're doing, man.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Some people got power, change you forever. Like the city of sin, you never came out like you went in.
That was Power of False Love by Buds, made available through PodSafeAudio.com. And we were listening to Hemant Mehta, a 22-year-old atheist living in Chicago. Hemant is on the board of directors of the Secular Student Alliance. You can learn more about the SSA by visiting secularstudents.org. Check out Hemant's blog, An Atheist Walks Into a Church, at ebayatheist.blogspot.com. Read what he's been posting for Off the Map by visiting otmatheist.com. Or you can email Hemant at H-E-M-A-N-T, that's Hemant, at secularstudents.org. Well, there's only one day left in February, but that means it's still Black History Month, so we're going to take a minute to hear from the Black American Freethought Association. I had McKinley Jones and Tanya Hannibal Williams of the Black American Freethought Association on our last H&N podcast, and during that conversation, McKinley mentioned the true meaning, the secular meaning, of many religious-themed Negro spirituals. Here's a recording I took of Brother Leon Dukes, the treasurer of the Black American Freethought Association, speaking about and singing some of those spirituals at the Unitarian Church in Albany. Dukes's performance accompanied a month-long art exhibit of free-thinking leaders of the Black Civil Rights Movement. Here's Leon.
I'm going to sing a little song one way, then I'm going to sing it another way. Go down, Moses, way down in your land, tell old Pharaoh to let my people go. When Israel was in Egypt land, let my people go. Oppressed so hard they could not stand, let my people go. south of Egypt. And Pharaoh represented the master and the overseer. And we go down to that old press there and tell the master. So we just couldn't go and tell the master himself that we wanted to be free. So we had to tell him in a way that he would not know he's being told. So when we sung those songs, we sung in such a way that he said those people really feel it deep down in their heart about singing about Moses, singing about Egypt, singing about the children of Israel who had got set free. They were oppressed for 400 years. He said, what a compassion they must have for those Israel children. Well, that compassion was for themselves. And that freedom was to be free. Go down, Herod, we're down beyond the basic Dixie line. Go down, Herod, we're down below the basic Dixie line. Tell that man steal the land to let my people go. Go down, Harriet, way down the Mason-Dixon line. Tell the old Pharaoh to let my people go. Who knows who Harriet was? Harriet. That was our Moses. And she went down into the Southland. She could neither read nor write. Some of them said she might even have a few mental problems. And she would go time after time and bring folks up out. Statistics say that over 50,000 slaves try to escape a year. 50,000 slaves escaped a year. Sometimes it would take over a year, sometimes 2 years, and sometimes 3 years from escaping to reaching the freedom land. And when they got there, as Brother McKinley said, we need to tell the history, they didn't become satisfied. They would have to go back, as other songs say, and bring their kinfolks. And when you look at those trees over here, the Christmas tree, it symbolizes, the acorn on there symbolizes a family member who has been sold away from the mother or the father. And to remember them, and then with freedom came, to go back and find that brother, find that sister, find that brother, and bring them freedom.
You can learn more about the Black American Freethought Association by visiting BAFTAHOME.com. That's BAFTAHOME.com. Looks like we're out of time for this week. Check back with us next month for another HNN podcast. In the meantime, visit HumanistNetworkNews.org to read our weekly HNN e-zine with news, commentary, cartoons, and humor for and about humanists. Humanist Network News, both the podcast and e-zine, are made possible by the Institute for Humanist Studies, a nonprofit organization that serves as a resource for and about the non-religious philosophy of humanism. You can learn more about the Institute for Humanist Studies at www.humaniststudies.org. The Institute offers online courses on humanism at humanisteducation.com. Don't forget to call the HNN listener comment line at 206-338-4168. I'm Duncan Crary. Thanks for listening. And now we have a special treat. I have a recording of Larry Jones, president of the Institute for Humanist Studies, performing It Ain't Necessarily So on the trumpet in the Humanist Center in downtown Albany, New York. Take it away, Larry.
To read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so.